people just walking down the street, trying to escape the city heat. I saw her from the corner of my eye. Yeah, she looked so good, I thought I'd die. My heart went bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, bang. My heart went bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, bang. Something said I shouldn't waste no time. If I'm ever gonna make her mine, I walked right up and said, I do you do, do, do. She said, I bet I do as good as you. My heart went bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, bang. My heart went bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, bang. I remember when I held her tight. Can be, 'cause I love her more than I can tell, tell, tell. Sunday afternoon we'll hear the bells, and they'll go bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, bang. Oh, they'll go bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, shang, lang, bang, bang.
CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstead Show, the radio show where we talk about comics.
Sure is catchy.
Sure is catchy. Yay, Colin. Yeah. CITR 101.9 FM. I already said that. Out of Vancouver, UBC, yada, yada, yada. We're going to talk about comics today. Our special guest is Colleen Coover. She is the cartoonist behind an assorted array of filthy and not filthy comics. And we got Banana Sunday, Small Favors, and some shorter stuff in Paper Cutter and Sexy Chicks, as well as the first year X-Men. Do I have it right? X-Men first year?
X-Men first class.
First class. Ah! I failed.
Because it's like the first class of X-Men?
Yes.
Yes.
But is it the first class?
It what?
Well, I don't know. Because, you know, they were doing
and
stuff years ago.
And they're also very classy.
They are classy, most of them.
They're the world's strangest teens or something like that.
There we go. How are you doing today, Colleen?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
Talking to you from the studio that I share with about 20-odd other comic creators here in Portland, Oregon.
Wow. I knew you guys are close, but you all have the same studio?
I think there's...
We share office space, yeah.
I think there's more than 20 cartoonists in Portland, Colin.
There's not usually 20 cartoonists here all at once.
Ah.
But sometimes it feels that way.
Now, just so people know, we were listening to the Archies Bang Shang-a-Lang, and I guess today will be an Archie-centric Ink Studs. Is that a good way of putting it?
Yeah, you asked me to pick the music, and I happen to have an Archies tune in my head. And
just
that's all it took.
All right. Well, it's fun stuff. It's a good way of starting the show.
I thought it was kind of the appropriate mood for my work.
It is.
I am heavily influenced by the Archies, by the Archie comics, not necessarily the 1960s and 70s animated television show, but definitely by the comics.
Why don't we start out with there then? Your how you got into comics as a young lady. And what was the what took you in your different directions?
Well, my sister is 7 years older than me, so by the time I was born, she had quite a few comics already. And I just literally from birth grew up with comics in my life. So there's never really been a time when I wasn't reading comics. Even, you know, just when I was only looking at the pictures, not even being able to read yet. So I am born and bred a comic book girl.
Raised on a steady diet of Dan DiCarlo.
Yeah, and also the Harveys. And my sister, my older sister, actually enjoyed horror comics more than she liked the kids' comics. So I managed to traumatize myself a few times on those.
What
like
kind
the
of?
Horror comics from Marvel and DC in the early 70s.
Like Fin Fang Foom and...
Ping Fang Foom?
No, like more along the lines probably of oh, what's the one with Cain and Abel?
House of Secrets.
Yeah, yeah. And House of Mystery and stuff like that.
Boris Karloff Presents, that sort of thing?
Perhaps.
That's dumb.
Although, we got all of our comics. My grandmother worked at a Five and Dime, and all the leftover magazines, rather than send them back to the distributor, they would just tear the covers off and send those back, and they would get credit for it.
Mm-hmm.
So all the magazines just went into the garbage, but she would bring us the comic books.
Awesome.
So we had a nice stack of coverless, well-read comics.
Well, those horror comics, the House of Secrets and House of Mysteries are fantastic. I'm actually on a bit of a kick right now of collecting old Alex Toth stuff. And going through those, there's also some Bernie Wrightson, Michael Kaluta, Neil Adams, I think Alex Nino. Lots of good stuff to look at as well.
Yeah, they're
scary.
Great. So. And kind of creepy sometimes, too.
Yeah, no, they're ahead of their time, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that people need to check out more often.
Did your sister turn out to be a goth or anything?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Did your sister turn out to be a goth or...
No, she does computer stuff in New York now. I don't know. No, she grew up with a much more level head for regular jobs than me. I'm completely useless that way. It's a good thing I'm good at cartooning because I don't think I would have been able to do anything else.
Well, what was the interest that took you to cartooning?
It's like breathing water and breathing water. Did I say breathing water? Breathing air and drinking water. It's just what I do. I grew up just doodling. I remember doodling out little Batman strips based on the television show. Being very careful to draw Catwoman just so, and you know, Robin had a little R on his chest and. Yeah, that's just what I did.
So did you go into any art schooling at all?
No, I tried, but I went to the University of Iowa when I graduated high school, and the art program there sort of proved to be kind of disappointing to a person who wanted to do illustration work. It was more about like painting and writing your art statement and
yeah.
You know.
I know exactly what you mean.
More about the process than what you were actually doing, and it was very boring to me, so I actually ended up being a theater major before I dropped out altogether.
Ah, interesting. Hmm. What was your first comics that you started working on? Because, like, the earliest stuff I think I have by you is Small Favors, but I get the feeling that that wasn't your first work.
Yeah. Paul and I, my husband Paul, worked a little bit together. He was my first sort of introduction to actually producing a comic and getting it published. I did some short strips for an anthology that he wrote and edited called Attitude Lad It was the second series of Attitude Lad from Slave Labor. And I just did some, like, short strips. It was all sort of, like, absurdist humor type stuff. And that would have been, 94 or something. And then sometime in the interim between 94 and 2000, which is when Small Favors actually got published, I sort of dabbled in... trying to do like a a graphic novel with him, and I really wasn't disciplined enough yet, and it just wasn't working out, and so we sort of worked at that a little bit, and we actually did sort of a prototype Banana Sunday strip that we were sort of trying to work into a comic, and then sort of the idea for Small Favors hit me all at once, and I worked on that for a couple of years before I took it to Fantagraphics / Eros to be published, and that became my first major work. But first was the Attitude Lab little bits and pieces.
Now the Attitude Labs, was it more kid friendly stuff?
No, it was like your absurdist punk rock humor stuff with a little bit of short fiction, hard-boiled fiction sort of thrown in there. It had art by Phil Hester and Vincent Stahl, as well as me. And they had worked with Paul before. Phil had worked with him on Fringe at Caliber Press.
Okay. So Paul's been writing comics for quite a while.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. He's pretty much mentored my career because, you know, growing up doodling at comics and not really knowing anyone else who was doing comics at all, I would draw pictures, but I really didn't know how to put them together. I wasn't really much of a writer. But once we met and he started writing for me on the short stuff and sort of introducing me to earlier stuff. He was a manager at a comic shop, and I got introduced to a lot of other material that I'd never had access to before, through his collection and through the comic shop's collection, and just sort of together we sort of educated ourselves on the process of creating comics.
Were you familiar with the alternative press, like the Hernandez brothers?
Yeah. In fact, I kind of consider myself almost more influenced by the Hernandezes than I am by like Dan DiCarlo or any of the other Archie guys. Just sort of the Archie stuff sort of got filtered through the Hernandez brothers in my head and sort of came out the other end as me.
Well, I think the Hernandezes may have been influenced by Archie as well.
Oh yeah, Harvey heavily. Too. Absolutely. But yeah, in high school I read a lot of Love and Rockets and Cerebus and ElfQuest and the typical, you know, 80s black and white stuff. Also the X-Men before that and whatever I can get my hands on, really.
Was there any influence from manga?
Yeah, I was reading a lot of manga when I started doing Small Favors. I still read it quite often, but I was pretty heavily influenced, especially by some of the adult stuff, like Bondage Fairies. And that was actually one of the impetuses for Small Favors, is that I wanted something that was sex positive and female friendly, sort of like the way Bondage Fairies is, except that every once in a while in Bondage Fairies something horrible will happen. You know, like actually mean evil things.
Not exactly.
I didn't want that sort of breaking in on anybody's little fantasy there.
Happy time.
Yeah, exactly.
The sadness in the happy time.
Yeah.
And maybe I should just say to listeners, we may talk about adult comics. So listener discretion be advised.
It's a little late now.
We didn't get into graphic details or anything. Not that we're going to get into graphic details, but just in case.
I don't think we're getting into trouble for saying the word bondage.
I don't know. You can't show it in Canada. Or can you?
Yeah.
No, it's...
You guys know I did a strip for that Little Sisters thing a few years ago.
That was actually the lady that hosted the show before me for several years with Colin, Robin Fisher.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I was in those too.
Yeah.
There we go. Little Vancouver connections.
That's right.
And you'll be glad to know Little Sisters is still there.
Sounds like I've got a call coming into this phone, but I'll ignore it. Sorry. Sorry, Canada.
So, small favors. I guess we'll get a little more into that now. You wanted to do a sex-positive comic. I'm curious, is your the inking style you use, the storytelling to it, it seems really polished and nice, which is the big difference, I think, between a lot of the other Eros stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that, was that part of the aspect, is making sure it's nice and clean to kind of be more approachable?
Well, I just wanted to make good comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just beginning and end. It wasn't really about a style choice, just that's the small favors became the project in which my style really developed and matured and got to the place where it is now, eventually. You know, I had to learn on the job, and that just, you know, it came out of just working and practicing and sort of developing my style as I went along. It also comes out of doing some illustration work on the way, and looking at some of the other cartoonists, you know, that have come up in the last 10 years. I looked at a Seth piece, and my brain just sort of warped around that, and I started my line work immediately. Got a lot cleaner after I just looked at that one piece, and that's the way it happens a lot. You know, you'll be tooling along thinking you're great, and then you'll see something that just really hits you, like it'll just smack you in the eyeball, and then everything changes, and it can happen all at once like that, like a thunderbolt.
Well, Seth is I think a good example of someone that exemplifying that clean thing,
because yeah.
I actually in my head I kind of felt that similarity just in the technique of looking
yeah.
at the work. It's
yeah, that
kind
brushwork, that line work, that sort of 50s style.
The goodness.
No. Clean but lush.
Clean but lush. I'm going to play a quick song break. What song would you like me to play?
How about You Are My Sunshine? Or what is it? Is sunshine? It's just sunshine.
Just sunshine.
Yeah. Yeah, that one.
Okay.
Okay.
So we'll be right back. So just stay on hold. You'll be hearing the music. And okay. We'll be right back. Inkstuds,
okay.
CITR 101.9 FM. CITR 101.9 FM. This is the Inkstead Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. And our special guest this week is Colleen Coover. I'm just going to let folks know what's coming up in the Inksteads for the next while. Next week, our guest will be actually an interview I did last week with Bruce Granville, who, I don't know if it's Greenville or Grenville. I said Greenville when I was talking to him. I realized afterwards there's one less E in the name. So it probably is Grenville. But I talked to him about the show at the Vancouver Art Gallery, The Crazy Show, which is opening next Saturday, which features work by Kim Deitch, Art Spiegelman, Seth, who we just mentioned, Daniel Klaus, Alison Bechdel, Sean Tan, George Harriman, Winsor McKay. Who am I forgetting? Lots of people. It's really fantastic. So that's next week. Week after that will be Dave Kay. Week after that will be Marv Newland, who is also part of the show at Crazy, who did the Lupo the Butcher cartoon, as well as Bambi versus Godzilla. Who hasn't seen Bambi versus Godzilla? It's awesome.
We could ask our guest.
Have you seen Bambi?
I have seen Bambi versus Godzilla years ago.
And is it awesome?
It's pretty awesome.
The saddest cartoon ever.
It is.
Oh, Grave of the Fireflies.
I don't even know
what it is. Yeah, I guess. I actually haven't worked up the courage to watch Grave of the Fireflies. I've had a copy of it for years, and it just seems too sad. I watch Totoro over and over and over. But,
I love
but forget
Totoro.
It, no.
See, I'm
I
horrible.
I want to see the sad kids.
Grave of the Fireflies is a Japanese film about two orphans who live in a cave in Japan as the war is ending, and they basically starve to death just after the war.
Neat.
That sounds horrible.
It's the saddest cartoon ever.
And it's probably gorgeous, isn't it?
And
it's
it was
beautiful.
Released, it was released as a double feature with Totoro.
You're kidding.
No.
That would be so traumatizing.
Totoro was like Miyazaki's. This is what I understand. If anyone knows differently, you know, feel free to email me and tell me how wrong I am. But, as I understand it, Miyazaki released them as a double feature to attract children to see the more serious piece.
Oh my God, that's horrible.
Yeah. There you go.
I'm just kind of, yeah.
Yep.
Wow. And there will be a lot of manga and anime stuff at this show at the Vancouver Art Gallery as well, including, I'm very excited to see some Junko Mizuno original pages. Ooh.
Band of the Young in Tokyo? Or Band of the Old in Tokyo?
That's Tatsumi. Oh. Junko Mizuno does.
Oh, I know who you mean.
Okay, yes. There we go. Sorry. Back to our guest. Hi, Colleen.
Hi.
I'm just very excited. It's a big Vancouver Art Gallery. It's very prestigious and fancy.
It sounds pretty awesome.
So I highly recommend coming up and checking it out if people can. It's huge. It's the largest show they've ever had there as far as an installation at the Art Gallery. And like compared to last summer, their special show was it Dali to Matisse? I can't remember. You know, from Dali to Matisse to Art Spiegelman and Seth and, you know, the guy that created The Sims. It's quite a different look. It'll be nice. It'll be really nice. So go check it out. So back to small favors.
Mm-hmm.
So two books and then the one color special. Is that pretty much as far as you wanted to take it?
That's as far as I wanted to take it at that time. I have a deep affection for the characters of Small Favors, and I would love to revisit them. And I planned on one another issue coming out sometime this year. That ain't gonna happen. The reason why it's not gonna happen is because I started working on other stuff, which is turning out to be a lot of fun, and it just at that point at the color special, it seemed time for a break, time to not just be the woman who does the sex comics, time to revisit the Banana Sunday story, which, like I said, we had started a prototype of Banana Sunday before I even started on Small Favors. And I wanted to work with Paul again. He had been, you know, he had been there for me all through this, the Small Favors stuff, sort of helping me write, because like I said, I'm not much of a writer. It's not that, you know, I can't write. I just don't really enjoy it very much. it's not the part of the storytelling that I like to do. So we focused on that for a couple years and put that out, and I'm pretty proud of Banana Sunday.
Now, why the fake name for Paul?
Excuse me? Oh, the pseudonym?
Root Nibbit.
That's a long story.
Colin's like looking at this, like kind of mystified at the name on the cover.
The thing is, he has these Banana Sunday novels in the works, and but he also has all these adult novels also in the works, not like sexy adult, but like contemporary adult fiction type. Mm-hmm. And while in comic books you can jump from genre to genre to genre, it seems like less so with fiction, with just books.
Yeah.
And publishers, I think, like to pigeonhole a writer in a slot, and they like writers to stay in their little pigeonhole and not leave. So his plan was to publish his novels under his name, Paul Tobin, and then the Banana Sunday books only under the name Root Nibbit. And it just happened that the comic books came out before the novels were ready to go.
Oh,
I know. That's the story. It's
Well, Dave Cooper, he for his children's book, I think released under the name Hector Mumbly.
Yeah, and Renee French has a pseudonym for children's work, and you know, Lemony Snicket and Daniel Handler are the same guy. It's all that same stuff.
I wouldn't want to see what a parent who bought
a Dave Cooper piece by mistake? No.
Yeah.
or Renee French for that matter. Golly.
Hey, you know, the soap lady's pretty friendly.
Yeah, well, that's one of her children's books.
But it's released under the name Renee French.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, The Ticking may scar a child.
Yeah.
Or may just scar the parent, and the child would totally get it.
Yeah.
So back to Banana Sunday. Enough of other people. So it's something that he's exploring further in novels, the same characters, or?
Yeah, it's a different story with the same characters.
So is this kind of setting the stage for what's going to come?
No, not really.
No?
No. The comic is pretty autonomous. It's just a different... It's the same characters with Kirby and Nichols and the three monkeys, Go-Go, Chuck, and Nobby. But it's a much richer, more sort of magical story in the books, or will be, rather, when the books are ready to be published.
Well, it looks like you guys had fun making it.
We sure do. We have a blast. Which is a good thing, again, because it's, you know, otherwise we'd be really unhappy.
It would make
all we can do.
It would make things very awkward at home.
Yeah.
Now, you did that with him. You did the story in the paper cutter with
mm-hmm.
him as well.
And yeah.
Tell me a bit about that one.
That was fun. That was just him sort of like doing a little mystery sort of British-y kind of old-timey mystery story with a twist where a cat burglar is terrorizing the town of Bates Hollow, and rather than stealing people's belongings
or their cats.
Hmm?
Or their cats
for that matter. She steals their hearts. And there's a little visual play where rather than being terrified, the people of Bates Hollow sort of seek this cat burglar out and sort of hope she'll come by, because, you know, who doesn't want to lose their heart? So it's actually very sweet.
It is. No, it's nice. I love Paper Cutter. It's like my favorite anthology now.
Oh, me too.
It's
great. It's published by Greg Means, who has this tiny little micro press here in Portland called Tugboat, and you should check it out, y'all.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, my favorite publishers in Portland are, I'd have to say, the Tugboat stuff and the Sparkplug stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Both are just putting out fantastic stuff. Because what's it with Portland? Why do people love it?
Why? Because it's awesome.
Because it's awesome.
Oh, no, it's not. Nobody move here. We're full.
Oh.
Yeah.
Put up
the gates on the bridges, you know.
What? You have enough cartoonists?
You can't throw a rock without hitting one or two on the head. around here. It was comic book month this last month, did you know?
Yeah, the mayor proclaimed it. Official
proclamation.
Wow.
Yeah.
The whole month?
The whole month.
And actually, on the proclamation, Periscope Studios, your studio that you're a part of, was mentioned as part of the proclamation.
Oh, I didn't actually read that. That's cool.
So yeah. Do you get free parking or?
No.
Free transit?
I have to pay extra taxes because I'm self-employed.
Oh.
I know.
And they have free transit downtown, Colin.
Hey, another good reason to go to Portland.
That's right.
And citywide Wi-Fi or downtown-wide Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Powell's.
Yeah, it's a little slow, but you can log on.
Mm. Yeah. I was doing it at the hotel. It was great.
I like Powell's.
Yeah, Powell's is wonderful.
I spent $60 on one book when I went to Powell's last
Neat.
Week.
I spent $200 in 4.5 hours the first time I went to Powell's.
And if Yay. You know Colin doesn't spend money. So tell me about Periscope Studios. How did you guys all connect together?
Well, Periscope, at the time it was called Mercury Studio when I came to Portland. And they sort of, they were already extant. They were a bunch of cartoonists who, as I say, were sharing rent in an office space. Downtown Portland, and they kept inviting me over, and I kept on being like, okay, whatever, I'm shy, I don't wanna, and then a couple of summers ago, it got really hot here in Portland, and I didn't have any air conditioning in my house, so if I wanted to get any work done, I had to find a space to work where there was air conditioning, so I started hanging out here to do my work, and I found, to my surprise, that A, there were other people there that I could, like, talk to and not, like, talk to my radio or the walls in my in my apartment, you know, while I was working all day by myself. And B, I was getting a lot of work done when I came to the studio. So I joined up, and since then we've moved to a larger space and had more members join, and we renamed the studio Periscope.
Nice.
And there's people from all different genres. There's Dylan McConus, who does web comics. There's Steve Lieber and Matthew Clark and Jeff Parker that do mainstream comics. Ron Randall does mainstream comics. Jesse Hamm sort of walks the line between mainstream and independent. And boy, there's a bunch more that I could name.
And I think he's coming up to Vancouver at the end of summer.
Jesse?
Yeah.
I don't know. He's
doing a book with Dirk Kirk Kim, right?
Yeah.
They're coming up here at the end of the
sweet.
Summer or something. So just to throw that out there for folks.
Yeah. Yeah, Derek lives here in Portland now. Everybody lives here.
Everyone. Not me. I like my freedom in Canada.
Your freedom. I wish. I wish we had the same Canadian freedoms. The freedom to go to the doctor and not pay as much. Oh well.
But you have cheap beer.
Is it not as cheap in Canada?
No, I spent $14 on an 18 pack of PBR and I was gleeful like a kid in a candy store.
That's crazy.
Simple things make me happy. I'm going to play another song and then we'll get back and talk about the X-Men First Class and anything you got coming up. So what would we got? Sugar Spice or Who's Your Baby?
Who's your baby?
Okay, we'll be right back. Inkstead, okay. CITR 101.9 FM.
Hey, what's your favorite thing in the whole world? Fantastic.
Now you tell me, how much do you love me?
Oh, about this much?
Heavy.
Who's your baby? Who's the one you love?
In every way you're dynamite. Do you know how good you really are? Please don't let her stray away after tonight. Can't stop now, it's been so good so far.
Who's your baby?
Who's your baby?
Who's the one you love?
You're the only one for me.
Who's your baby?
Who's your baby?
Eyes can see. And upon opening your eyes,
when morning comes. What's the very first thing on your mind? If you had enough hay, would you give it some? And would I thank you to you, do you find? Who's your baby?
Who's your baby?
Who's your baby in the morning? Who's your baby at night? Who you want when you want somebody to come and hold you tight? Oh,
who's your baby? Who's the one you love?
You're the only one for me.
Oh, who's your baby?
Who's your baby?
Who's your baby?
Who's you dreaming of?
You're the only one my eyes can see. Who's your baby in the morning?
Who's your baby at night?
When you want somebody to come and hold you tight.
CITR 101.9 FM, this is the Inkstead Show, the radio show where we talk about comics. Here's your little bit of Archie's trivia for the day. I was just telling the folks, Robert Crumb actually uses old Archie pages, the crappy ones, as he likes to say, not the Dan DiCarlo stuff, to draw on. That's his favorite type of page.
On the other blank
flips
side.
Flips them over and, yeah.
Wow.
So there's your piece of... Archie trivia for today.
I'm just hoping to start an Archie's music renaissance among indie comics aficionados across North America with this little radio show. That's the level of self-importance that I subscribe to.
If we have,
I listen to the Archies more.
If the Inkstuds have that much influence, I'm going to be in shock and awe. It quite surprised me, though, that people actually listened to the show. I was in Portland at Subtown and was like, I love the show. I'm like, you do?
Thanks. Yeah.
So that's fantastic.
Yeah.
And then this weekend, speaking of comic conventions, you're going to be at, as well as I will be at, Emerald City.
That's right.
Comic-Con.
In Seattle.
In lovely Seattle. Not as lovely as Portland.
Not as many bridges.
No.
There's still a bunch of bridges, though.
It's got that nice sound. That's nice. It's nice.
Seattle.
It's got a nice downtown. It dies at night, but what the hell?
It dies at night.
Yeah.
The soul leaves it.
It does.
It's pretty to look at, but, you know, there's nothing really going on there at night.
Like zombies walk out of
there's
nowhere?
There's not really much going on here downtown at night, I suppose. Either.
Junkies?
Downtowns are not good for nighttime.
No. Portland's a weird downtown. You've got, like, the hobo camps there, don't you?
Yeah. The missions are all here downtown as well.
When I was walking through that area last year, all my friends were all kind of freaked out. And
yeah.
I work in the worst neighborhood in Canada, so I didn't really bat an eye.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not so bad. They're not bad people. They just block the sidewalks sometimes.
That's okay. Just gonna walk in the street for a sec. Well, the whole bridge, this was like the bridge was shut down there. I think that was at the Burnside Bridge.
It was under construction for a while.
Yeah, sometime last year we were walking over it and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's before I realized you could have taken the train right outside of the convention to downtown, and I actually walked all the way.
Gee whiz, yeah, you could have just sped downtown and missed all that.
I felt like an idiot.
You got the scenic route.
So what kind of stuff are you going to have at Emerald City?
What am I going to have? Well, mostly I'm going to have prints that I have made, and just some art prints. I might have some banana sundae, but I'm kind of running out of that. I'll definitely have some small favors. The two volumes for sale. I'm not really sure if I'll have any of the color specials because I'm starting to run out of that. I think that's probably about it, other than my own self.
Tell me about the little drawings that you have available at your table.
Oh, my little guys.
Yeah.
My little guy drawings. I've had a couple of little just original pieces where I take a small piece of paper, like maybe 2x2, and either make a watercolor blotch and sort of find a little face or a little bunny in the watercolor blotch and sort of draw in the little eyes and ears with ink, or else I do a little illustration, a little cartoon illustration built on a lightly penciled hairpin shape. So like I'll make a loop and then sort of find like the body shape and the head shape and the mouth and make a little cartoon guy out of that. And I've had those for sale for several shows now for like $4.
Is that kind of a fun exercise for you, and also a chance to give people something that they could have as their very own for cheap?
Both. Yes. It is a fun exercise. And cheap art.
And cheap art.
Yeah.
It is.
Cheap
actually.
Original art.
Scott Mills sold me this tiny little drawing of Darkseid at the Stumptown that I loved for cheap. And it's fun getting little cheap things. I love it. I love
original
art.
And ask me to do a sketch, and I'll do a sketch for you if you come to the show. you know, whatever. I'll be there. You can talk to me. I'm fun to talk to, as you can tell, listening to the radio right now.
Indeed we do. And I got to say, as far as selection of stuff that I'd be interested in for Emerald City, you're one of a handful of people, so.
Yes.
It's pretty mainstream.
It's a good show. I like that show a lot. It is mainstream in a lot of ways, but it supports the indie cartoonist quite nicely. Jim Dimonakis is a very hospitable host to all the artists of whatever genre, and as I am, you know, sort of crossing over into that sort of mainstream genre myself of the superheroes, it's nice to be comfortable in both seats.
Why don't we talk about the mainstream superhero?
Okay.
It seems about the right time. X-Men, the First Class. So what's the... maybe tell people a bit about what you're doing in there, about your backup stories.
Right. I am doing little occasional backup stories, one to six pages long, depending on, you know, how long the main story is. They're written by Jeff Parker, who's a member of Periscope Studios. He is the main writer on X-Men First Class, and basically a few like a year ago, the initial 8-issue limited series that X-Men First Class kicked off with came to an end, and then they started up a new regular ongoing series. This is how companies do things. They decide if something needs to go ongoing, and then they start over.
No more number one issues to sell.
Yeah, exactly. It started off with an X-Men First Class special with short stories by a number of different artists, including Kevin Nolan and Nick Dragota and Paul Smith. And Parker had me draw three one-page humor strips, basically, of like Magneto going to a coffee shop because he knows the X-Men hang out there and he's going to corrupt them, but then they never show up and he drinks so much coffee that he has to pee really bad, but he can't get a hold of the bathroom key because the barista is like yakking on the phone, and so he has to use his magnetic powers to get the key.
Aw, poor Magneto.
I know.
Can a brother just pee?
It's actually a lot funnier in the actual book than I just said.
Colin looks sad now.
Yeah, and in another piece, like Marva Girl has to save a little family of baby ducks with her telekinesis, and people liked it. So the editors at Marvel said, "By golly, this is a good idea," and now I'm doing these backup strips in X-Men First Class, and also in Power Pack Day One, which is written by Fred Van Lente, and he's doing a four-issue series, which is the retelling of the Power Pack's origin, which was originally created by Louise Simonson and another lady whose name I forget.
I should know this, but I don't.
In the four-issue series, we're doing each of the four Power Pack members is explaining the basic physics behind their individual power. So there's like a strip about gravity, one about velocity, energy, and the one I'm working right now is density. So that's fun. A little edutainment for the kids.
It's like those Schoolhouse Rocks.
Yeah,
comics.
Like that. Yeah, except in comic books instead of on your television.
Now, yeah. I'm curious what kind of tools you use.
I use paper and a pencil and a brush for ink. I use a Winsor & Newton watercolor round number 7. Winsor & Newton Series 7 watercolor round number 1. That's what I use. And I use Rapidograph ink, rapid draw, because it's nice and slick. And then I feed it all into my computer, and then I mess with it. Just like using Photoshop instead of like whiteout, and then I use Photoshop to do any coloring work that I do.
Do you color the strips yourself, most of them?
Yes, I do, because they are mine, and I will color them myself. Thank you. I'm very controlly that way. I don't think many other artists are that controlly. This is one of the reasons that I don't do full length stories, is because I kind of want to do everything on my own.
Well, it's a certain meticulousness to it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
What's it like doing work for Marvel? Do they allow you to do your own thing?
Well, so far it's great. Actually, Paul and I are working on a full-length story for a Spider-Man special sometime in the summer, I think in August. It's a story starring Mary Jane Watson and a bunch of ladies of Marvel Comics. And basically, it's just like Mary Jane, Millie the Model, Hellcat, She-Hulk, Clea, who else? Scarlet Witch and Marvel Girl go on an Asgardian adventure.
On a what?
Enchantress. It's a lot of fun.
Asgardian.
I think everybody will like it. Everybody pick that up.
It's the you know, the Thor.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
The Norse thing.
The Norse thing, yep. Right. You know, Ragnarok. And
yeah.
It's like that. That sounds awesome.
Sorry, I went all Marvel on you guys.
No, that's okay. I
it's not something I understand.
I'm having fun. But do they let me do what I want? Yeah, so far they do. I think mostly because it's really short pieces, and they enjoy them, and people respond well to them. So you know.
One thing I noticed looking at your site is commercial work. How much commercial does it balance with your comic work?
You mean like illustration?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a sort of semi-regular bunch of illustration clients, a couple of newspapers here and in Seattle, and a glossy magazine here in Portland. That is really nice to have, because basically the pay for a single illustration is often equitable to like an entire page of comics at Marvel Comics. So it's nice to be able to do a single piece in maybe a day and get as much pay as I would for, you know, an entire page of comics. The thing is, with the comics, I'm not doing it so much for the money. It's nice to be paid for doing comics, but it's my art. I consider illustration to be like my job,
yeah.
and it's a good job to have. It's just a really, really, really good job to have.
It's one that hones your skills in different ways, I guess.
Yes, and I have learned a lot about cartooning doing the illustration work.
So I guess
you always learn new things.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're trying to get more into one image than necessarily what you do in a sequential page.
Yeah.
So you got the Marvel, the Spider-Man special coming out. Anything that you're doing of your own?
Paul and I have completed an original graphic novel, which right now is titled Freckled Face Bony Knees. And it's totally done. We're just sort of deciding where we want it to be published at this point. just sort of thinking about it. But it's different from anything else we've done. It's sort of a character study that's of a woman who's she is kind of in a weird place mentally, where she thinks that perhaps she is emotionally stunted because her father removed her part of her brain and made a clone twin of her from whom she's become separated, and she thinks because of that separation she can't feel things. It's actually quite hard to describe.
Yeah.
it's a fun piece. Everybody who reads it tells me, "Oh, that was really sweet." And I'm like, "Okay." I thought it was kind of creepy, but okay, cool. I'm glad it's sweet as well.
I think it's something to do with the art style.
Yeah, possibly. It is kind of a sweet story, because there's a lot to do with like love and relationships, and both the sister relationship and the relationships with the people around her. But it's about 98 pages long, and once we figure out what we want to do with it, it should be coming out in the next year or so.
Nice. So it's all done. It just needs to find the right home.
Yes, exactly.
Excellent. Well, I think we're. Oh,
I was just going to ask if there was another Banana Sunday.
Not in comics.
Just the books.
At least not at the moment. We don't have any plans on doing any more comics for Banana Sunday.
How about Filth? Any more Filth?
Hmm?
Any more Filth coming out?
Small favors, I think he's referring
to. Well, again, I'm having such a good time. I've talked about this with some of my other friends who have done adult comics, and there gets to be a point where you kind of done every position that you can think of, and you've told all the stories that you want to tell, and you want to start getting into like characterization and stuff. And when that happens, the original intent of the work sort of falls by the wayside. And anybody who like spent a decade of reading Omaha the Cat Dancer will understand this, that once it went from being what it was to what it became, which is more of an adult soap opera, it kind of, you know, it's like it was still really good, it was still really pretty, but it wasn't what you came for, you know?
Kind of jumped the shark.
So,
yeah.
You know, so if the muse hits me, it'll happen. And like I said, I have a lot of affection for those characters, so it'll probably happen. I just can't say when. I'm sorry.
I had to ask. It's one of the, you know, I have a set of questions I had to ask. So. Yeah. So thank you very much for joining us today, Colleen.
Well, thank you.
And I'll pop by and say hi at the con, because I'll probably be wandering around kind of glossy-eyed after buying too many Neil Adams Batmans from...
Yeah. Bins. Hey, when's this Get podcast?
Today.
Today.
It awesome. Will be online within the hour.
Great.
I'll send you a link.
I'll blog it.
Awesome. Okay, thank you so much for joining us. And,
thank you.
Look forward to seeing more work.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That was Colleen Coofer, cartoonist behind Small Favors, as well as... Banana Sunday. I forgot to mention she has a story in Sexy Chicks, The Boogeyman, which is quite a nice, sad little story. And, of course, Paper Cutter issue 2, with kind of her... Looks like what... If you look at the back cover, it kind of looks like what Catwoman would look like if Colleen Coover drew. So it's quite a marvelous little book. On the note of Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle, if you're there, don't forget... Saturday night at the Fantagraphic store. Jordan Crane will be having an art opening. I love Jordan Crane's work. I am really looking forward to meeting him and buying a bunch of prints off him because it's beautiful stuff, and I think you should all check it out. And other notable people of the alternative persuasion that are going to be there: Jeffrey Brown, Pete Bagg, Ellen Forney. I'm pretty sure Jim Woodring will be there. Not too sure, though. I hope so. And Andy Runton. And please don't get upset if I forget you, but other people. But all great folks. CITR 101.9 FM. Don't forget, next week will be Bruce Grenville, of the senior curator of the Vancouver Art Gallery. Thanks, Duds. Bye-bye. Say bye, Colin.
Bye.
There we go.